There was a young lady from Exeter, and all the young men threw their sex at her. Just to be rude, she lay in the nude, while her parrot, a pervert, took pecks at her. Ken Hankey, the other film critic with the Mountain Express.
We're coming to you from the Cinema Lounge
at Carolina Asheville. Yes.
And we are Elitist Bastards.
And we've been to the movies.
Yes. For anyone that listened to last week's podcast, you heard us discuss
who was getting stuck with what.
Yes.
Yes.
And well, I was the original plan was that I was going to watch A-Team and you're going to watch Karate Kid, yet out of the goodness, the kindness of my heart.
Well, I definitely feel that it was out of the kindness of your heart, but
yes,
let's also put into perspective that I had 9 other movies to deal with.
Right.
So, you know,
Karate Kid's about 8 hours long.
Somewhere in that range, yes.
Yes,
so I think it's still playing from when you went to see it,
isn't
it? Yeah,
yeah.
I thought so.
I'm going to go catch the
You're gonna
end
go
of
see
it.
The ending
yeah.
of it now?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, I ended up watching The Karate Kid.
Yes, he did. I have not seen it.
And I will have to say I was surprised that I don't know if it's a good movie, but I didn't mind it. And when I originally thought that I was going to be bored to death because it's a 2-hour and 20-minute long Karate Kid movie and it stars Will Smith's son,
which makes it smack a vanity
yes,
project.
It was... Yeah, I remember when I was a kid and got excited when my mom bought me some Hot Wheels. So
yeah, well, like, if you were a kid and your mom bought you the starring role in a movie, how would you feel?
I don't know.
Well, knowing you, you'd probably be embarrassed.
Depends on the movie.
Yeah, well,
maybe.
That's true.
So, but it's too long at 2 hours and 20 minutes, but at the same time, it doesn't feel... I never felt completely bored with it. I mean, there's probably a bit...
Did you check the time?
Maybe once just to see if it was moving along as quickly as I thought it was. Not in a bad way, but it's well made, especially when you take into account this is from the same director who brought us Pink Panther 2 and some other crap that I can't remember off the top of my head.
No, but I remember it was equally...
Yeah, this guy has never made a good movie. And this is probably the closest he's gotten so far. It's well made. And it moves along well enough. There's also this tendency, which I find fascinating, for it to completely play against your expectations the entire time.
How so?
There's no real reference to the other Karate Kid movies. There's, like, they go out of their way to mention that this isn't karate, it's kung fu. The only time we get close to a reference is Jackie Chan waxing his car, and much to the disappointment of the woman sitting behind me who immediately whispered, "Wax on!" There was no mention of waxing on or waxing off.
Oh,
so,
well,
into
each life some rain must fall.
Yes. So it was... Jaden Smith is Jaden Smith. He spends most of the movie being a brat, which he seems pretty good at playing. But the real surprise in all of this was Jackie Chan, who is actually, for maybe the first time I can remember, given an actual role instead of just being...
He's usually just Jackie Chan,
yeah,
or
being,
whatever
being
his
really
movie
happy.
Persona
yeah.
is.
I mean, he's always likable because he's playing
because
Jackie,
he's Jackie Chan. Yeah.
But in this case, he's actually given things to do. Like, he actually has to act, and he can.
Startling.
Yes.
Yes, well, how is Taraji P. Henson?
She's good as usual, but she's not in the film that much. She's mostly just...
Yeah, that's what I figured.
She just sort of wanders in and out on occasion. It's mostly Jackie Chan and Jaden Smith.
Mm.
So there is this odd... The violence in the film is kind of off-putting because it's completely bloodless, but very visceral in the way it's shot. So... Which wouldn't be an issue, but these are preteens.
11-year-olds, yeah. I can see where that
beating each other up, so... Not to be... I don't know. I don't want to sound...
Like an old fogey?
Yes, but...
Well, yeah, but it... I want you to tell me how you stack that up with having liked Kick-Ass. I realize the target audience is different.
Well, it's not so much the target audience, but... The point of Kick-Ass was to be violent and gory and over the top.
And point of this is to be
more realistic and uplifting. And it's supposed to, it's aimed for kids. So it's much different.
Okay. Would you see it again?
Probably not.
Okay.
I might watch bits and pieces just to see if it holds up, but I don't think I would watch all of it again. It's not 2 hours and 20 minutes.
No. You're not enthused enough that I'm tempted to
watch Karate
Go
Kid?
See it, yeah, so.
Well, I'm not... I wouldn't say you have to. I don't know. It's more of like a pleasant surprise that it wasn't...
Cosmically god-awful.
Yes.
Yes.
It worked well enough, so.
Well. And our second big feature?
Yes, was, or is, the A-Team.
Mm-hmm.
Which is another... I don't know why they have these two movies coming out in the same week, and both based on...
It's because everybody loves the 80s, haven't
yes.
you been told?
But this one is... I remember liking this TV show when I was about 5. Beyond that, I can't really understand...
I remember finding the TV show vaguely annoying, but of course I wasn't 5.
Right. Well, the whole point of it was to blow things up real good, and...
Which has never appealed to me a whole lot.
Right.
You know, it's a...
Well, you...
And it's a character failing, I know that, but...
Nevertheless, they have decided to...
Revamp it, retool
yes.
it, and recast it.
Really, what they've done is they've turned this crappy TV show into...
A really expensive...
Yes, but they... I mean, it's... I get the feeling they're like, well, what if we just took this crappy TV show and made it into a movie, and then... That comes along with a bigger budget and name stars, and so you get a glossier version of the A-Team, which for a while works because the whole thing's absurd. All the action set pieces are ridiculous.
Well, I always found the original TV show to be the height of realism myself, so.
Well, you should watch more TV.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But... What was I going to say? Anyway.
I wasn't there.
Yes. So the film is completely over the top, but it's one of those things where it works because it realizes it's over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And the director, Joe Carnahan, paces the film well. It's stylish enough. But it just gradually loses steam. And... By the time we get to the climax, it's just noisy.
And is it necessary? Are you sure that it loses steam and that you just don't lose interest in it?
No, I was fine with the film. It's just... You have these semi-clever set pieces with these guys doing these ridiculous things. And then you get to the end and it's just not quite the payoff. That it's just a lot of things... running into each other and exploding. And for something like this, if it had put more thought into its ending, it could have been good. Like, something more satisfying. But without it, it just sort of...
Fizzles?
Yes. So. But the cast is good. It's... Liam Neeson's fine. I'm not the biggest Liam Neeson fan. But... He has a
I'm trying to think if I would consider myself a Liam Neeson fan. Is there such a thing?
I'm sure there is.
I mean, there probably is. I mean, I think he's... I don't like, oh, God, Liam Neeson's in this. I don't want to see it.
Well, he has this... what I called in my review of phony, like, respectability that he has this presence to himself. So...
Yeah, well, that's a...
Like I said, what I just said makes no sense because you completely distracted me with dirty gestures. I was going to say more, but I'm not going to bother now.
Oh, okay.
So, well, I think as far as casting goes, they did an excellent job for what, I mean, Bradley Cooper is ideal for that role, and the guy from District 9, whose name I can't remember.
Charlton Copley?
Yes.
I think it is, yeah.
Is, and he's probably the best in the film just because he gets to play an insane character, so he gets to do pretty much whatever he pleases for the entire film.
Oh, okay. In other words, he's obviously having fun. The others, it's questionable.
No, they are too, but he gets carte blanche.
Yeah, I see.
So,
okay.
And then you have Rampage Jackson playing the Mr. T character.
Is that on his birth certificate?
I haven't checked it.
Oh, okay.
I'm not a birther. So, he's perfectly, he's not, I mean, he's a UFC fighter. He's not exactly a good actor. He's fine in the role. It's not really...
Whoa. There's an implicit notion coming up out of that, that Mr. T was a good actor.
No, I'm saying he doesn't need to be a good actor because... The bar's been set pretty low. Like, I'm positive Mr. T's a nice guy, but his acting ability's pretty much nil. This guy's above nil, but there's not much range there. I mean, he's
it's
fine for...
Not a, probably a whole lot of range to the character either,
no,
so...
No, well, they try to, like, the whole thing from the show where he's afraid to fly on airplanes is explained, which is sort of silly, but... Whenever we remake a movie, we have to over-explain everything.
Being afraid to fly on airplanes is just common sense. But
well, and then he goes. There's this part where they all go to prison, and he comes out of prison, and he's learned to be a pacifist and nonviolent. Which all it takes for him to not do that is one quote from Gandhi, which I've never seen Gandhi use to justify breaking someone's neck. But in this case, it is. If you need a reason,
the unexpurgated Gandhi.
Yes. Yeah. So if you need a reason,
quote
to,
Gandhi,
to drop someone on their head,
well,
you've watched this movie.
Ah, well.
You watched
Secret in the Rise.
Yes.
Yes.
Which is just slightly classier, I'm assuming, than 18.
It's a lot classier. It's an Argentinian film. It won the Oscar this year for Best Foreign Language Film, which, of course, is going to make things confusing at the end of the year as to would we consider it a 2009 film or a 2010 film. Well, considering that it was not released to anybody other than Academy viewers in 2009, I would have to say it's a 2010 film. And it continues the kind of interesting pattern that we've had this year of everything that's been really good that's come out. Shutter Island, The Ghost Rider, Mother, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, have all been mystery thrillers of one sort or another. So is this one. And this one is possibly a little more convoluted than the others, which in some cases might be hard to believe. But it's partly by virtue of the fact that it's set in two different time periods, and occasionally there are sequences that are not necessarily true. They are memories, and the memories may not be accurate. It's that probably sounds confusing. It's not. The film is very easy to follow. It's compelling. The acting is superb. It's easily one of the best things I've seen this year.
Where would you rank it with these other films you mentioned?
Probably...
I'm assuming you're not going to consider it better than Shutter Island?
I'm not going to consider it better than Shutter Island, but I will say it's probably about on a par with The Ghost Rider.
Okay. Better than Mother?
Yes, I do think it's a little bit better than Mother. Mother is fascinating, but Mother is fascinating partly because it's so strange.
Right.
And I'm not sure that that's really going to translate in the long run into being so good.
Okay.
But this is a film that I have no hesitancy recommending. I am very pleased to note that it opened strongly. We were supposed to get a screener on this, and it didn't come until the week that the film was opening, so it was useless to us. Thank you, Sony Pictures Classics. And on this type of film, a review does tend to help a good bit, but it opened strongly enough that it will, you know, it was already going to be here for another week before.
Okay.
So, really, I mean, this gets really highest of recommendations. This should be seen. Well, Please Give is a film from Nicole Holofcener, whom you might know from a 2001 film called Lovely and Amazing. She works in the indie realm. She also made a film in 2006, I believe it was, which was called Friends with Money, which I didn't think worked very well. But then again, you put Jennifer Aniston in it, and I think you already defeated yourself. But this is an interesting film in that it deals with upper-middle-class New Yorkers who run a trendy, it's really a used furniture store, where they sell furniture from the 1950s that you thought was ghastly when it was in your parents' house. But now, of course, there's a market for people who think that it's the height of cool to have ugly furniture and appreciate it because it's ironic that you have this kitschy crap all over your house. Of course, they get this furniture by kind of haunting estate sales and obituaries and getting there first. And, you know, it's a little vulture-like. And so is the other aspect of their life, which is they have a cramped apartment, so they have bought the apartment next door, in which lives a 90-year-old woman whom they are waiting for to die so they can break down the wall and enlarge their apartment. The irony here is that the woman, who is Catherine Keener, who is very big in the indie realm, is... she is the ultimate bleeding heart. She feels guilty about everything. She feels so guilty about things that she's useless. If she goes to volunteer someplace, rather than helping, she stands there and cries. If they tell her to try and be upbeat, all she can do is be sympathetic. She gives $20 bills to homeless transvestites and cosmetics. At the same time, she does absolutely nothing for her own family, and this is kind of the point of the film, but it's never, none of this is addressed very directly. There's no exact point of view. But it's an ensemble piece. It's entertaining. It's thought-provoking. But in all honesty, it's a film I don't think I'll remember in 6 months. And a few years from now, if you ask me about it by title, I will probably go, have I seen that? Now, when I read the title, I'll remember what it is, but it's not, it doesn't strike me as having a good deal of lasting value.
And the other movie opening this week, at least, there's a review in this week's paper,
right,
opening Friday, is the new zombie flick from a Mr. George Romero.
Yes.
Who has made a zombie flick or two.
Yes, this is his sixth. It's called Survival of the Dead. It's been getting pretty rough treatment from fans and from reviewers. Of course, fans have been giving Romero a pretty rough treatment for some considerable time now. I'm not sure why. I don't see a particular lessening of quality in these films, but then again, I never took these films all that seriously to begin with, so I may not be the best judge in that respect. But as far as gut-munching zombie mayhem is concerned, the film's got it. It has a couple of really good set pieces. The storyline is preposterous in the extreme, and I think it's intentionally preposterous. I'm not quite sure why there are two clans of warring families on this small island off Delaware who all talk with stage Irish accents. But, and people have blasted that for being unrealistic, which I find somewhat funny because they don't seem to have a problem with a movie in which dead people get up and try and eat you. But, you know, warring Irish clans on an island off Delaware, well, that just made the whole thing unbelievable.
Well, I would assume they're there so the film can be topical, right?
Well, some yes, sort of... but actually the funny thing about it is the way the film is topical, which all Romero films are political to some degree, is...
But usually in a heavy-handed kind of way.
Yes, usually in a heavy-handed kind of way, and sometimes in a ridiculous kind of way. I mean, the Land of the Dead, I still think was, you know, a major, huge miscalculation when it tries to make the zombies sympathetic. And this kind of, can't we all just get along? Well, these people want to eat you. They are. How do you get along with that? And if they don't eat you, if they bite you, you turn into one of them, and you'll then want to go around and eat your friends. And, you know, and it's a lose-lose situation. But this time, Romero seems to be really focused on the politics of divisiveness for their own sake. When you, the further you go into the film and the feuding clansmen, which what they're feuding over at this point is, should the zombies be exterminated? Should they be contained until a cure can be found? And can they possibly be domesticated to perform household tasks? But what it really comes down to is whichever one chose one side, the other would have taken the other side. And these people are fighting. They don't even know what they're fighting over.
Right.
And in fact, the ending image, which is pretty potent, which I won't spoil, is pretty, you know, it's absolutely to the point as to that being the theme of the film.
Okay.
The zombie stuff is the zombie stuff. I mean, Romero seems to delight in finding new ways to off zombies, and he's found some pretty good ones. There have been some complaints about the CGI not looking particularly good. The only time I found it really distractingly bad was when they had a group of zombie heads on sticks that were, of course, they were still alive, but they're, you know, they're disembodied, and it looks pretty hokey. I'm not sure how you could have done the scene any better. The CGI could have been better, but
right.
The only way you could really do the scene was with CGI animatronic heads. Would have looked like rubber animatronic heads, so that was kind of a, you know, it probably didn't need to be in the film, but it's a very small part of the film. People have complained that there is a zombie on horseback, and I see their point, but I'm not particularly disturbed by this, so... No, I enjoyed it more than I did, and it's not in the digital aesthetic of his last zombie picture. This actually looks like a movie. It's done with the Red One camera system, and it looks interchangeable with a regular film. It's widescreen. Actually, some of it is beautifully shot, and I have no real complaints with it. It's not a great picture. I don't think it was ever intended to be a great picture.
I think the real question, though, is how does it compare with Monkey Shines?
It's so long since I've seen Monkey Shines, and even though it has Simeon value,
yes.
I just don't feel like I'm qualified to weigh in on that.
Okay. So, you're going to watch Monkey Shines when you get home and give your verdict next week.
Not unless somebody gives me a copy of Monkey Shines.
Okay, we'll see what we can do.
Okay.
Well, this Thursday, the 17th.
Yes, the 17th.
June, in the year of our Lord, 2010, we'll be running the latest installment of our horror films, the Thursday Horror Picture Show.
Yes.
And this week, it's...
Michael Winner's The Sentinel from 1977. A film that has been said to have ended Michael Winner's career as a big-budget filmmaker. I really don't think it did it by itself. I suspect that the preceding film, you know, Wanton Ton, the dog that saved Hollywood, had something to do with this. At the time, the film was considered the last word in just absolute tasteless gore.
I'm assuming it's one of these examples that doesn't quite hold up as tasteless.
Well, it still holds up pretty much as tasteless, but the amount of gore in this film has been so exceeded in intervening years that you might have difficulty figuring out just exactly what all the fuss was about. From any other standpoint, the biggest problem with this film is the central premise. And the central premise is a dilly. There's this order, you see.
Uh-huh.
One of those super secret Catholic orders.
Right.
That just, you know, they're all over popular fiction. And they are in charge of keeping a guardian. Where? At the entrance to hell. And where is the entrance to hell? It's in a Brooklyn apartment building.
Maybe you've never lived in a Brooklyn apartment building.
Well, that may well be, but it still raises serious questions when you start to examine the film.
Okay.
I mean, where does... At the end of the film, they tear the apartment building down and put up a new apartment building. Where does the guardian sit while they're tearing the old building down and building the new one? Do they give her a portable camp stool and she sits in the empty lot while they build the damn thing around her?
That's tense.
Yeah, well, whatever. In any case, it's very hard to quite buy
the central premise. Are you saying this film is far-fetched?
I'm saying this film is far-fetched. I'm also saying this film is very creepy, and it has... some...
Is it because of Burgess Meredith?
Well, yes, Burgess Meredith adds to the creep factor. Naked Sylvia Miles adds even more to the creep factor. But, no, it has a definite atmosphere. The apartment building is itself an extremely atmospheric thing. And it's a film I've always really felt got a raw deal. I mean, it's a silly film, but if you examine them, most horror films are.
Right.
So, I don't, you know, I mean, it's just a film that, you know, give it a break, give it a try. It's a nicely juicy, splattery horror film with a cast that's to die for. How Michael Winner convinced Burgess Meredith, Ava Gardner, Arthur Kennedy, Eli Wallach.
Small bits with Jeff Goldblum.
But of course, Jeff Goldblum and Christopher Walken weren't really anybody in 77. So I'm sure they were very easy to convince. Of course, John Carradine is in it, but John Carradine would appear in anything for a buck and a quarter. However, Winner makes splendid use of him. It's a wonderful scene. He actually only has one line that you can understand. Everything else is this kind of muttered Latin, which is probably muttered because I doubt seriously if Carradine knew any Latin. But that one line is so marvelously theatrical that it's just priceless.
Well, I haven't actually seen the film before, so...
So you'll be seeing it for the first time.
Yes.
Well, I'll be interested to gauge
Hopefully
your reaction.
Other people will as well.
Yes, well, we'll be
Or even for the... If they've seen it before, they should come watch it again.
Oh, yeah, you know.
Especially if
they have seen the television print. Because the television print is not only seriously cut, it's added footage and a voiceover to make you think that this has nothing to do with the Catholic Church.
And Tuesday, we will be having another free screening for the Actual Film Society. That Tuesday will be
Howard Hawks 20th Century with John Barrymore and Carol Lombard,
which
very first screwball comedy.
Right, and you've before you ever showed me this movie, you told me this was the movie you showed to people who claim they didn't like old movies.
Yes, this is, actually I have two, and this is one of them.
Okay.
And I've shown you both.
Yes, and I've tried selling someone on this, because I was talking to someone yesterday about the Film Society screenings, and he was saying how he didn't, had never been able to get into older films, and so I was explaining
to him. The question in my mind is have you tried?
Right.
Or, you know, it's just when I watched one once, I didn't like it.
Right. Well, I'm not sure. So. We didn't get that far, but I did explain to him that this is the movie that you show people when they
claim that. I've never actually run into anybody who disliked this film. I mean, it's fast-paced. It's very funny. For those who don't know, the title refers to the train that used to run, I guess it ran up until 1967, between Chicago and New York, the 20th Century Limited. And a good deal of the action in the film takes place on this train. What you have is you've got Oscar Jaffe, you've got John Barrymore as Oscar Jaffe, a theatrical producer who turns a little lingerie model, he refers to her as. Her name was Mildred Plotka. And he turns her into a star, whom he names Lily Garland, which would have been really nicer if he had informed her that he had changed her name, since nobody on stage is answering to Lily Garland. In any case, they become a couple. He is a control freak and insanely jealous. So, of course, this falls apart. She runs off to Hollywood, and when she does, she becomes a great success, and as one of the characters says, when she left him, she took his genius with him. And he just goes from one flop to the other until he's broke and has to sneak on board this train disguised as a Kentucky colonel. You know, Barrymore and Whiskers with a fake nose coming up going, "I'm taking the 20th century, I hope I ain't late." You know, and it all becomes about getting back together with her, partly for financial reasons,
right,
but also for the fact that he spent $6,000 in telephone calls to her the past year, and she hung up on him every time. So, I mean, he's obviously got it bad. The stars are wonderful. The supporting actors are wonderful. The film takes, I would say, probably about 10 minutes to hit its stride. I've seen it four times at least that I can think of with audiences, and I've noticed that they don't seem to quite know what to make of it until
the scene
with the chalk.
Yes.
And the minute that this happens, they're pretty much into the film for the rest of its length.
Right.
So, you know, if you don't like old movies, come out, try it, see. Maybe you'll be pleasantly surprised.
I think you will.
And if you're not pleasantly surprised,
you can
bitch me out afterwards.
Yes. So there are two films that
there are two films that are opening this week that haven't been reviewed. Please Give opens this week, as does Survival of the Dead. But there are two other films, more mainstream items coming out, and they are, of course, Toy Story 3 in 3D in select theaters.
Which is the big
Pixar thing, yes.
Which, after Up, I'm a little disappointed that we're stuck with another Toy Story. Because I was finally starting to like Pixar after Up, and now it's
like a license to print money, though.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's not just, you've got the pre-sold Pixar thing, and then you've also got the fact that it's
in 3D.
It's in 3D, and it's a pre-sold item. It's Toy Story.
Yes. So.
You know, and I have no particular interest in it myself, which is why you're reviewing it.
Right.
That and the fact that you are our Toy Story expert, because you...
I've seen two of them.
Yeah, well, there are only two that you can't have seen, so you're authoritative, and I'm not. I think I've seen the first one.
Okay.
So.
That's fair.
Are you looking forward to it?
No, I'm sure it'll be harmless and mildly amusing. I doubt it's going to be... I'd be amazed if it's awful. I'd be kind of pleased if it was awful. It'd be more interesting than the prospects of just watching another Toy Story film. But what if it turns out to be great? Then I'll be happy with that.
Okay.
I have no issue. And what's the other film?
Jonah Hex.
Yes. Another comic book adaptation.
Yes, it's an adaptation of a comic book that, I'll be quite frank, I've never heard of. It's obviously not one of the top tier comics where, you know, you say the name and everybody in every country on earth has heard of it.
Right.
Jonah Hex, I don't think you're going to get that kind of reaction. I'm curious about it. I'm curious about it primarily because Neville Dean and Taylor wrote it.
Yes.
And these are the boys behind the Crank movies. Unfortunately, they did not direct it. They gave the direction over to a person whose name escapes me at the moment. I think it's Jeremy Harwood, who his only previous directorial credit is Horton Hears a Who. This is the man I would have gone to for this assignment. And there's also, of course, the Megan Fox factor.
Not only Megan Fox, but Megan Fox trying to crack wise.
And do a southern slash western slash generic cowboy movie accent.
Right. But Josh Brolin's in it. He's respectable.
And John Malkovich is respectable. So I have some slight hopes for it. 40% of it was apparently reshot by another director, the man who made Constantine, which I'm, you know, one of the six people living who actually will admit that he liked Constantine.
I think I'm number five.
Oh, you're number five? Yeah. Okay, so there's... If we can locate the other four, we could, you know, sit
start
down and
club.
Watch it. Yeah, we could have a Constantine club, so, you know, so whatever. But, you know, I'll go see it, and I don't think it's going to be great, but, hey, I didn't have to see the A-Team or the Karate Kid, so
no,
I feel special.
Yes. I guess that's all we have for this week.
Yes, we had a reader letter, but of course we forgot to print it out.
Yes, so...
We're good at that.
So maybe next week.
Maybe, yeah.
We'll leave everyone in suspense. What was in the letter?
I don't remember.
I do.
Oh, well, see, there you go.
But even you will be in suspense.
That's why I forwarded these things to you, so that I don't have to try to remember.
Fair enough. So,
in any case, I'm Ken Hanke.
I'm Justin Sowler.
And we are...
Elitist Bastards.
Yes.
We've been to the movies.
Yes, we have been to the movies.
And the Mountain Express was kind enough to let us talk about those movies.
Yes, they are. And our producer, our coherer, Mr. Steve Shanafelt, who I am pleased to say is the mucilage that holds the stamps of our minds to the envelope of our souls and makes us appear intelligent.